Hi everyone. On this episode of the podcast for the course Water System Design, I would like to welcome Hasti Ter Rekat, founder of Heritage Hands-On in the Netherlands. Hasti, can you tell us a little bit about your background and the work of your organization?
Hi, thank you for having me. My name is Hasti and I'm a cultural heritage professional. I studied social politics and regional planning and also have a fellowship in sustainable development. In Indonesia, I started working in heritage for Bandung Heritage Society, and later I co-established Sumatra Heritage Trust. When I moved to the Netherlands, I set up Heritage Hands-On. It is a bureau that focuses on very practical approaches to heritage conservation practice, especially in Indonesia.
That's very impressive. So you collaborated with others on an article for our journal Blue Papers in which you highlighted the HUL quick scan method as a holistic planning and design approach toward promoting heritage and sociocultural practices. And specifically, you touched on workshops in two water cities, that's Muntok and Banjarmasin. I would like to know, what was the aim of these workshops and why was it so important to bring in these actors of heritage, both tangible and intangible, and also the community, public and private, to the same table?
As professionals, we realized that to translate concepts like HUL into practice, local stakeholders, government officers, and non-government agencies, that is to say, that every stakeholder had to understand it as a more practical approach. So together, Indonesia and the Netherlands developed the HUL quick scan method, which can be applied to every historical site or historical building. The most important point is that in the past, conservations usually focus on individual buildings, but the historic urban landscape, or HUL, focuses not only on individual buildings, but also on the surroundings. Another aim was to involve not only the owners of historical buildings, but also the community around it, including policymakers. So basically everyone. This proposes a holistic way of looking at what valued by the local community, who at the end of the day are the ones who decides whose heritage it is.
You mentioned heritage, you mentioned community, you mentioned the government, you mentioned the owners. That said, what were some of the values that came up from these different stakeholders you brought to the same table?
Well, every stakeholder says, of course, different things. Every stakeholder has their own interests, and sometimes different interests are not harmonious with others. That's normal. More often, there are also opposites and conflict with each other. And that's why sitting and discussing together at the table about a shared site or projects is very important. And that's why involvement of all stakeholders, which is promoted in SDG 17 of Sustainable Development Goal number 17, is the soul in our approach. And not only involvement, but communication. Communication is very important. However, this approach doesn't answer all the problems. So do not expect it as a formula to cure everything, all the problems. It is only the beginning of conversations between all stakeholders. And then when we have the results, for example, 2 workshops or 5 days, then we have the foundations to know how all stakeholders can go further to implement the agreements, let's say. It is a rather complicated process, but we try to make it as clear and simple as possible for the sake of practicality. Of course, without sacrificing the values of HUL itself. It's a very fun, actually, to do it. And you mentioned that we have done it in 2 cities. But actually, as we are speaking, we have done it in several cities too in Indonesia. The last one was last month in May in Medan, in the capital of North Sumatra.
Coming back to the city of Muntok, could you share specific insights on the workshops you conducted here?
Oh, Muntok. Muntok is a former tin mining town. It is a relatively small city, but it has a rich history due to industrialization and the multiculturalism of the community. Since mining activities were reduced, Muntok struggled to find a new identity until these workshops were organized to help explore how the city could use its richness of heritage to find a new identity and a new life for this town. The workshops inspired many to consider Muntok's historic urban landscape and help in the dissemination of knowledge and in creating commitment. Some local experts have started making virtual tours of Muntok's cultural heritage. The state's company of tin mining, called PT Timah Pasarao, is expanding its support to create museums in other cities in Bangka. And for the local government, the workshops led to an increasing awareness and conciseness of urban heritage conservation and development. A ban on building new bird nesting houses in the historic city center was applied recently. In many towns in Indonesia, there are many bird nests all over the place. So that's why this point is important. Moreover, the workshops serve as an incentive for several projects implemented by the local government, such as the designations of more heritage buildings, the revitalization of the beach area, which includes a mangrove forest, and the projects on coping with flooding issues in the lower parts of the town. And we formulated several issues as well as ideas to address them. One of the distinguished problems is environment related, and we hope that the environment is not separated from the heritage conservation approach.
That's quite interesting how you combine all these different aspects together in your workshops. We wanted to find out how you incorporated the SDGs in these workshops. Would you say the outcomes were in line with the SDGs?
Yeah, luckily, cultural heritage has been incorporated into SDGs, specifically in SDGs point 11, which is about sustainable cities and communities. But also, it is found in other SDGs because practically, we couldn't have sharp deficiencies in either SDGs. They may have distinguishing points, but actually, they relate to each other. We incorporated the values found in SDGs, especially those related to cultural heritage, environment, and identity. It is very important based in all of our workshops. Also because SDGs have holistic components, the same as historic urban landscapes, except that historic urban landscape is specialized in cultural heritage, while SDGs cover a larger context.
And that complements really what we are looking at this week, because we are advocating the SDGs as a comprehensive framework, as you mentioned. So we really need to consider them all together and see that one SDG actually affects the other directly and indirectly. So what were some observations applying such broad concepts from the workshops you conducted?
Well, basically, we want to raise awareness. So why are we doing this? Actually, it is about their identity. Heritage is about identity. It is their place and it is important for them. So they decide that it is their heritage. So we start from the very basic ideas and apply very basic elements about how to reach this understanding through participatory focus group discussions or FGD. It is a fairly long process. It took a lot of energy, various mediums, and all of our knowledge and experience to have a smooth and fair process. And because it is an international cooperation between Indonesia and the Netherlands, there is also a cultural gap, a different way of communication and interactions. So it's very challenging, but it's fun. Second, delivering results of all the processes is very important. We don't want to create a workshop simply for the workshops, but working with the community, with government officials, with non-government agencies, with universities, you realize that you cannot learn this at school. You have to do it yourselves on the field. Then you would know how to do it. There is no formula for it. Every society is different because There are always values and norms in every society, cultures and traditions and everything. It was challenging, but again, I think we managed to bridge all the differences.
So going forward, how would you say these activities addressed other SDGs that were not exactly related to the aim of these workshops? And how were these opinions, values, interests translated into practice? Perhaps you would like to mention Banjarmasin here, since you already mentioned Wuntong.
Yes, our second workshop of HUL is in Banjarmasin, the city in the south Kalimantan of Indonesia. In Banjarmasin, water is everywhere and embedded in their lifestyles. But new policies in the new development, unfortunately, are no longer based on water, but based on land. And this creates challenges during these transitions. First of all, it will change the identity of Banjarmasin and its citizens. And second, there are a lot of physical and mental adjustments. And third, the question is, why does this transition happen? Is it needed, or does it come from a lack of understanding about identity, or what? We don't know yet. These questions are actually the most interesting part of the workshops. I think it's already quite an achievement that we can ask them. So the solutions are tentative because the challenges are so huge. We don't promise anything, but we do our best. Could you imagine changing values and traditions from water-based to land-based? It is different from finances. So, inspired by the workshops, the local participants are establishing a heritage society supported by a Banjarmasin Urban Heritage Team that was set up by the Culture and Tourism Office of the city. This team works closely with stakeholders and the local university. Furthermore, by involving the local community in the workshops, people are more keen and more confident in participating in urban heritage projects. The workshops also led to more attention to prioritizing heritage as one of the main topics in the municipality's planning activities. I can give you some examples. The conservation and development of Kampung Sungai Jinga is an official project now and has already led to some initial reuse of old heritage buildings and the construction of a floating gallery alongside the Kampung riverbank. So Kampung Jinga is one of the designated sites in the Banjarmasin. Another result is related to the river identity and the riverside kampung as a key point for development. By using river culture narratives as the main inspirations for city development and introducing an adequate river management system such as safety regulations for settlement, water waste management, and domestic waste. Those are the case of Banjarmasin.
Yeah, you have achieved a lot. And just going back to the article, you mentioned that one of the findings of these workshops was that water was central to the city's identity. What made this obvious aside from the geographical and natural conditions of the cities?
Well, physically, let's take some examples of transportations and economic activities. Before, people used boats as modes of transportation, but now they buy motorbikes. And the local government also, instead of improving the quality of water transportation, they built roads. And before, economic activities like the market took place on the water, but now on land. So all these transformations are also the reason for slowly losing the skills and culture of how to live with and on the water. That's some examples.
I mean, it will be such a pity if they lose this water identity also because of these dynamics that are happening. But with this outcome, did you find a way to spread this message to the community that they are losing this water identity, or perhaps they may not even be aware of this slow transition from water-based to land-based?
Yeah, first of all, water is so integrated into their daily life. They don't even think about it anymore. And second, For the community, I apologize to say, but the citizens are occupied with their daily needs, so they don't even think about identity. The concept of identity comes from professionals like us. But what we can do is now to show who they are as a sort of a reminder. What is their identity? When I say communities, it's not all citizens, but community groups, because they are the ones who care and also who can think of these abstract issues of identity. So we have to be careful, because this kind of discussions actually doesn't reach the community. It stays among the professionals, not even reaching the municipality level. Sometimes we have to really speak the language of the common people who may not even know that word heritage, the word of heritage and identity exists. Anyway, we try to convey the message of the results of the workshops as simply as possible so they understand, all the stakeholders can understand. And also we try to see the identity from a practical way by not asking what forms a part of your identity. This is too abstract. But for example, in one area along the river, which has a kind of home industry related to water, like boat making, we saw that the productions, which includes all the skills attached to it, slowly disappearing because now they produce less boat, since more people buy motorbikes. This kind of explanations speak their languages. They understand what it is. So until now, we are still working in the follow-up of guiding the local people to take care of their heritage, and we are still communicating and corresponding in this way.
From what you're saying, perhaps if the community were aware of the SDGs as a set of, let's say, goals that contain certain elements that are actually also for their well-being, for their future, they may begin to think about their identity. In this way, how do you think the SDGs can change one's way of thinking?
Yeah, the community or the common citizen do not talk about identity. It doesn't mean they don't know about their identity. It is inherent. It is in themselves. Even without talking about it, they have it and they do it as part of their life. But because of this erosion of identity and transformations, I think reminding is actually important for the decision makers, the policy makers. Because at the end of the day, decision and policies will influence the lives and futures of the local communities. So I think education, either formal or informal, is also about SDGs. First of all, speak the language of your target group. And second is, do not split SDGs sharply, point per point. You have to see it as a comprehensive approach, because the efficiency of disciplines happens in academics. But in reality, there is no deficiency. Only then do we achieve the SDGs ideal. The third is, we think about structure. If it has not already been done, that is how to convey the message of SDGs through education, either formal or informal.
Well, thank you. I have one last question to wrap up our discussion. This course is targeted at water experts, water professionals, water managers, and they usually understand their projects or systems in terms of volume, pressure, size, you know, like the amount of euros it's consuming or generating, etc. But from your point as a heritage expert who also promotes the use of comprehensive approaches such as the HUL, and SDGs, what will be your advice to achieve a sustainable project that looks beyond parameters in their field of water management?
Well, all development should engage multidisciplines. Too often I saw in practice, but also in academia, that we stick to our expertise, failing to coordinate and collaborate with others. However, actually, we can achieve much more and much bigger. So my most important takeaway is, let's work in a multidisciplinary environment. Also, our segment works not for ourselves, but for the people. We as professionals are not the most important. We may have knowledge and experience, but actually, the local community is our target. If our work doesn't bring any results or significant change or benefit for the local community, I think we should first sit and think about why we do what we do.
Well said. Thank you so much, Hasti. It has been very interesting, and I'm looking forward to the next run of your workshops.